Blog Talk Radio.
People are showing their beings. Are validating contributions trying to make to the ongoing conversation about Freemasonry and interesting values-based organization that leads us to, I think, a more interesting and nuanced lifestyle. This is an acquired taste as a caution. Freemasonry isn't for everybody, and certainly the way we drill into it here in Freemasonry, in Masonic Effects, isn't the common, I think, conversation that we hear in Lodge, or should it be? That's where business needs to be conducted, and ritual. This is the part where we address meaning. And embrace the idea that without meaning, our lives, our actions, have very little substance. The life unexamined, you know, that whole notion. Again, it's a minority, isn't it? We wouldn't expect out of 100 how many Masons. Although we look at this in fraternity and brotherhood that. Every one of us is equal, and in some ways we are, and in other ways we are not. No, this is not a command structure. Freemasonry doesn't work with control and command. It's not a matter of being ordered to do anything or told. That's not how teaching occurred. Here in Upper Canada, we've had that experiment, and it hasn't gone well. We've tried to remake relationships. We understand very keenly what the relationships we want, but we have experimented like you and I, like anybody would, to find the path, to find the way to achieve that, to generalize. But oh my, you're quite right to point out that no one relationship is uniform across our landscape or across our membership. We have now, we're revolving around a large group of 33,000 people, maybe a little more, a little less, give or take. Each, think of the imagery of points of light, each one a point of light, each with a unique history, a unique level of capability, a unique outlook, a unique point in their own lives. Uniformity, well, we have to understand what it is that we're talking about. A uniform way of thinking, well, that suggests that we have that sit-down talk about our philosophy and about ethics and values. Here on Masonic Effects, you will realize that the effort is to the dialectic. We present options for you, the discerning listener, and you decide. My bias, my views come through, of course, as without apology, they would in any conversation. But the effort is for you to select. You select the path that is most appropriate for you, most makes most sense. And we embrace the idea of the dissenting opinion. We don't shy away from it. In fact, that we would suggest to everybody that it is a mark of intelligence to be able to hold competing ideas in mind at the same time. No, I didn't make that up. That made so much sense that it's resonated and it stuck with me for a great long time. Just like one day when I was sitting in a room realizing to myself, I can still remember realizing that everybody in the room was an expert on my subject. Everybody. Everybody was an expert in their own way. And so it occurred to me that I knew nothing. And it never occurred to me, in all sincerity, that it wasn't plagiarism. I was like, where was that seed? Where was that idea planted? And you're laughing at me now. You know that it was because I was reading on Plato. Yes. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, well, you know, that's where that whole discussion fits together. I'm not a savant. I don't walk around with all of the information that's in my brain readily available. It comes through. I have different traits and different things that I can do that I can't always quite account for. I can't always remember a name, which in my line of work was a benefit. But I can remember the emotional state of a person the last time I spoke to them, the first time that I spoke to them, and how? Observation. Just like with you, you observe things, you know things, you understand. We can know things without understanding how we know things. Yeah, don't think you're the only one that has caught yourself doing that. And it's not that you're making it up. We're talking about the human mind, this process, we can describe it as a computer, but it's so much more. It's like masonry in a way. I know that's a bit of a clumsy segue, but Freemasonry is so much more than any one of us can imagine. It's potential. It's that drive. It's that heart, the integrity, the sincerity that's within you, being expressed and shared in. Not that we're going to run away from these conversations. No, my goodness. We're going to run to the conversation. Be patient. Be patient. You don't always find these things in breakout groups, as we say. We're not a bureaucracy. We have bureaucracy to help keep our organizations operating and coherent. Just like we have constitutions that preserve and protect the environment, that bubble that we live in, and in order to do our work. Don't be kidded by those who might try to find comparisons with business. No, business would make the individual a commodity. So we're a little more difficult, I think, in that regard. We seem to be that. Moving away from that notion of having to deal with all these individuals and having to think out the greater good and the common purpose, and shed our political baggage and the baggage of our own lives. You know, that familiar comfort zone that we like to hear about. Well, when we put our feet underneath us, and we get down to some of the basics, Freemasonry is about growth and change. At the time when it began, probably not the way that Freemasonry was described, but when you think about it, as it existed over many, many years, in hindsight, you would have these insights, these ways of describing a process that you were bearing witness. And today we have longer processes, unique, but we also ask, and we also ask ourselves about this notion of history judging us, time judging us, conscience judging us. What kind of contribution are we making? Well, in this kind of an environment, Masonic effects, populism, being popular doesn't really have much traction. It's there. It is what it is. Here, it's not about being rude or aggressive or muscular in our approach to ideas. No, you can find that if you need that, if that's what you're working on, you can find that somewhere else quite easily. You don't need to find that here. Here is more discerning. It's where you and I lean in together to the conversation and talk about the things that we know to be part of our lives and part of our thinking, not necessarily what we blurt out. This is the vulnerability of Freemasonry. This is where change occurs. It's not on the outside. It's in the mind and the heart, and the emotion, the judgment. Then to begin, you'd be, without being generous to yourself, would be making that climb up the mountain a little steeper. So we reach out around the world to, and especially to our home location here in Upper Canada, not as a matter of privilege, although there's privileges that are afforded to life in this landscape, and there's also challenges, but that we have a unique history and a unique evolution, just like you and your Grand Lodge have. And that relationship that you have, that unique relationship with Freemasonry, puts people like me and maybe you into a position of wondering, is it not a hobby that we follow, it's not a club, although, you know, we want to shape it and make it that way because that's what's familiar to us. But darn it, it's a brotherhood. And we do things for within a brotherhood that is different. It's not excuses, it's understanding. The bully, sit down. You're going to be heard. Don't have to be so afraid. Oh, sorry, that's the big secret about bullies, is the fear-based. And then that ridiculous aggression that seems to happen during slight conversation, it's fear-based. We want to replace that with confidence. And you do that, as you know, through understanding. You replace the darkness and superstition with information. Oh dear, there goes the enlightenment again. Oh dear. Here we go again. Anyway, we have a good program for you today. I think it's worthwhile. The commentary, I think, is a path for the thinker. Maybe a bit too self-serving, but bear with me. The poetry today, Percy Shelley, Ode to the West Wind, one of the foremost odes ever written, just to give us that chance to sit back and think and wonder. And the music, well, Chet Baker and Bill Evans just started off, I Talked to the Trees. Yeah, it was where I am, the seasons are changing. We're going from summer into fall and anticipating winter with a smile. So sit back, top up your glass with your favorite beverage, get comfortable. We'll hope to we'll strive to inform and educate and to challenge. So enjoy. Reflective or restorative sentiment, the path for the thinker. One toxic, the other beautiful. Like the sailor who never learns to swim, fear of a powerful ocean turns to respect for it, respect being key to survival. Knowledge provides a modicum of security, but risk is what it is. What risk to an old order? Ennui, indifference, complacence, sloth. Our brotherhood is based on access to knowledge and use of imagination. Philosophy, symbolism, and history comes as easily to us as industry allows. If there is inspiration in the messaging, if there is perfection in a lodge at work, it is because of the collective intellectual property of individuals contributing to the symphony. The West Gate is where we winnow out those better suited to the audience than to the stage. Symphonies vary slightly in size, each chair waiting for talented artists who feel the chemistry and experience the impact. Knowing each note, each instrument has its place in time. And so my clumsy metaphor for the lodge is wrapped. Laziness doesn't belong there any more than a no-talent conductor leading a no-talent orchestra. That's the easier part. Knowing how to get there from where we are, that is the challenge. First, we talk. We draw everyone together because it will take everyone to achieve the goal. Everyone has a place. Do you think for a moment performance doesn't need lighting and sound, ticket sellers, ushers, advertising that stimulates, and a receptive audience to celebrate success. Everyone has a place in achieving the goal of striving to employ the imagination, to furnish the mind palace with the cathedral that all can see. We are timeless. Are we artists? Oh, that's, can you imagine? Can you just imagine?
Thank you.
all does, though, needs 11. Beautiful material. This is odd. Sometimes I think that Freemasonry, in a lot of ways, is a simple and sophisticated at the same time. It makes me wonder if we embrace the idea of sophistication, would it be the way that Michelangelo called it? Simplistic? The simplest, the world in its simplest form is sophistication. Simplicity is sophistication. I kind of like that notion because it's easy to digest. Easy to digest. But it's a point of view, like anything else. And what would the world be like? What would our actions be like and treatments toward one another if we, as we began to feast on a more sophisticated worldview? It would be quite interesting, I think. Quite interesting. We sit back, as we tend to here, and look for altered ways of thinking. Freemasonry is an altered way of thinking. It's not conventional, it's purposeful. Not an ideology, it's processing values. Take a look, if we're looking for the similarities in between us and the stranger, well, the notion of stranger goes through quite a metamorphosis. More than ever, Masonry respects intelligence and knowledge and wisdom. Always has. Doesn't always find it easy, but there's a respect. And we seem to appreciate the movement, our ability to move through different perspectives, to learn more about the object or the topic or the thought that we have in mind, the task at hand, and the note, what we pack into Masonic effects is simply an outpouring of that kind of thinking. You know, we go from the commentary, pulling together insights, to poetry, a completely, you know, the poet's giving voice to the soul of the world around us, helping us through words to find things that are obvious if we think about it in that way. It gives us, it's an enhancement. And then symbolism, those packets of information that are contained in the most clever kind of way. What does it all mean? Well, we were fraught with, we were throwing our hands. There was a lot of jazz hands running around when we were doing an analysis of how many people recognize the meaning of the square and compasses. Well, I'm sorry, but I didn't find that it was a problem. We aren't a brewery, and we're not a fashion house. Our brand is our brand. The rest, but I'm confident that the value of what we are, what we represent, is unassailable. The values, the philosophy, do what you want with it. Challenge you, men, people, it's not gender specific, but people have been doing that for thousands of years, and that's not going to stop. As if our positions are so weak that we can't withstand a bit of probing and questioning and doubt, what really have we accomplished? Of course we're capable of it. Just like every theology student is asked to think critically. They'll be throwing your hands in the air and saying, oh my goodness, I'm going to believe literally everything that's said and everything that's written. Oh, can you imagine how meager the world would be? how difficult it would be following the thinking of somebody else rather than developing the maturity to have your own thoughts. Not as a dilettante, not running around shrieking, a little ersatz anarchist. No, none of that kind of silliness. Thoughtfulness. Not trying to be something you're not. Being who you are, examining the world around, and we hope, discovering the truths that we have in common. Percy Bysshe Shelley, he was born in 1792. He's been influencing people for a long, long, long time. And here it is, Masonic Effects, tipping into one of his more famous bits of poetry, Ode to the West Wind. Yes, I've been facing the west wind lately, so I admit that. He was born in Sussex, in England, and he died at sea off Livorno, Tuscany, in Italy. And he's considered the English Romantic period poet whose passionate search for personal love and social justice was gradually channeled from overt actions into poems that rank the greatest in the English language. And he was heir to rich estates acquired by his grandfather. But Timothy Shelley, the poet's father, was a weak, conventional man who was caught between an overbearing father and a rebellious son. Shelley was educated at Sion House and then at Eton. That's pretty much corporal discipline, where he resisted physical and mental bullying by indulging in imaginative escapism and literary pranks. And if any of you are that vulnerable type where you're being bullied in lodge or mentally or physically threatened, I hope that it's not happening, but that said, it probably is. Indulge in imaginative escapism. Travel around. You don't have to, you're not chained to any one lodge experience. Go and explore the fit. But at the same instance, make sure you're not contributing to it. A little paranoid attitude isn't worthwhile. And the bully doesn't need an audience. He thrives on an audience, but he doesn't need an audience. And he doesn't have any power. He's just truly. We know about a great deal about Shelley's life and his family and his legacies, but I'll leave that for you to discover on your own. Here we're going to talk about one of the most famous of his poems. This is considered Ode to the West Wind. It's an interesting prank in a way. So it talks about the autumnal west wind that sweeps the leaves and winged seeds, you know, those little things that fall over my lawn. Seeds will remain dormant until spring, and the wind is the destroyer and preserver, you know, blows it all away. Shelley appended a note to this ode when it appeared in the Prometheus Unbound volume in 1820. Said this poem was conceived and chiefly written in a wood that skirts the Arno near Florence, and on a day when that tempestuous wind, whose temperature is at once mild and animating, was collecting the vapors which pour down the autumnal rains. They began, as I foresaw, at sunset with a violent tempest of hail and rain, attended by the magnificent thunder and lightnings peculiar to the Siskalpine regions. The note is interesting in that it shows the poem came out of a specific experience. I'm going to read it to you and see if we can share it, if we can dive into that experience. Imagine the kid born to wealth and part of the gentry. Rebellious or intelligent? History seems to be quite kind to him. And the Romantic period is where we began to hear more about the emotional state of a human being. Oh, again, that darn enlightenment, that humanist movement. Oh, wild west wind, thou breath of autumn's being, thou from those unseen presence the leaves dead are driven, like ghosts from an enchanter fleeing. Yellow and black and pale and hectic red, pestilence-stricken multitudes, O thou who charioteth to their dark wintry bed. The winged seeds where they lie cold and low, each like a corpse within its grave, until thine azure sister of the spring shall blow her clarion over the dreaming earth and fill driving sweet buds like flocks to feed in air with living hues and odors plain and hill. Wild spirit, thou art moving everywhere, destroyer and preserver, here, oh, here. Thou on those stream, mid the steep sky commotion, loose clouds like earth's decaying leaves are shed, shook from the tangled boughs of heaven and ocean. Angels of rain and lightning, they are spread on the blue surface of thine airy surge, like the bright hair uplifted from the head of some fierce maniad, even from the dim verge of the horizon to the zenith height, the locks of the approaching storm, thou dirge of the dying year to which this closing night will be the dome from a vast sepulchre vaulted with all thy congregated might of vapors, from whose solid atmosphere black rain and fire and hail will burst. Oh, hear, thou who didst waken from his summer dreams, the blue Mediterranean where he lay, lulled by the coil of his crystalline stream. Thank you. John Coltrane, Miles Davis, and Bill Evans, and Cannonball Adderley on that album. Also sax. You sit back and listen to Adderley, probably underrated, brilliant. This, the music that should never exist, should have been happiness and joy, should have been beaten out of the American slaves, but it wasn't. The brutality of the new that frontier, the genocide of the frontier, couldn't repress it, couldn't stop it. So offered as a homage, awkward as it is, to a fraternity that should never exist. Certainly for hundreds of years, who would have thought that possible? And yet here we are, and here it is. I noticed that we go from poetry, where we're looking into the soul of the earth and the universe around us, and then we segue into symbolism, and it always occurs to me, you know, why put symbolism into this program? Well, I'll be very deliberate and frank with you. When I'm looking and thinking about the symbols around a lodge, I need a moment to uninterrupt it, to contemplate. And sometimes my mind tends to drift off into really interesting thought patterns. And I that's interrupted so easily. And around a lodge, the hurly-burly of what's going on, the noise and chatter, it's easy. It's a bit irritating because I want to continue, but I always understand, you know, somebody wants a word with you, or there's somebody that needs a hand with something or other. That's what we're about, helping out. But then, what about the moment needed to dwell on, to let the purposefulness and the meaning of symbols percolate? Well, that was part of the development of Masonic effects, to create that opportunity, knowing this isn't something for that everybody likes to do. But I tend to think it may well be one of those discoveries, latter-day discovery. You save the best, as we often do as we age, we save some of the best experiences for last, if we allow ourselves to go through life with the freshness and curiosity that we first experienced when we were boys. It doesn't become tattered or worn unless you decide that. That's a choice. I'm sorry to say, there's a lot of things about life that aren't choices. choices that I was being chided by a fellow who was very concerned about other people making him look like a fool. Well, you do that for yourself, I think. You make yourself look foolish. And then it reminded me that the character isn't about what happens to us in life, but how we handle what happens to us in life. And that seems to be, you know, an idea that I want to have wrap around me in this bubble that I'm enjoying. You know, in here, I'm looking for the thoughtful conversation and the challenge and the debate. And I want the opportunity to sit back and learn the readings and the exposure to the freshness of different ideas and fresh minds and that discovery that here is one who aspires. It's absolutely Masonic, isn't it? Then we're going to unpack a little bit more. This we were finishing and we were looking last week at tools and an understanding. Who could possibly go through life as a Freemason without attempting to understand what it is that's going on? And I find it difficult to accept that we can say, well, that wasn't encouraged at the time, so I didn't do it. Well, gee, that's like saying you're going to walk through the woods, and unless somebody tells you to pick up that stone and look at what's underneath it and see if that salamander is still there, then you're never going to do it. Well, walk with me. You know, I've confessed to the world that I had these beautiful walks along the Atlantic, the shore of the Atlantic when I was a little boy. And it was pure bliss, pure joy, pure discovery, curiosity gone wild. Every day, every moment, every footstep, something new. Here's something new. What about, we're going to talk about the crane and the pulley and the mallet and the trestle board. Remember that this is all stuff that's come down and been translated because of Old English. The language was much, much different. Meaning has changed. No, I don't think that Freemasonry is the center of the universe. What does the mallet teach us? Well, I know you had that question on your very mind right now. Stop up your glass. We're going to dive into this, gentlemen. The mallet teaches to lop off excrescences and smooth surfaces, to correct irregularities and reduce man to a proper level so that by quiet deportment, he may, in the school of discipline, learn to be content. Heresy, huh? What the mallet is to the workman, enlightened reason is to the passions. What the mallet is to the workman, enlightened reason is to the passions. It curbs ambition. It depresses envy. It moderates anger and encourages good dispositions. When you pick up the mallet, here, I have one here. Think about this information, what it represents. It is to the workman enlightened reason, as enlightened reason is to the passions. It curbs its ambition, it depresses envy, it moderates anger, and encourages good disposition. What do the crane and pulley teach? They teach that human strength without genius and judgment can do but little. And that genius and judgment will affect that which strength alone cannot. Sensible, huh? What does the trestle board teach us? Oh, wait for it. The trestle board teaches us that as the workman executes the designs of the master, so we should faithfully copy in our life and conversation those excellent rules of conduct that are laid down for us in the Holy Scriptures, which will be infallibly secure to us permanent felicity in the realms of endless bliss. Pick up your Holy Scriptures and sit down with Joseph Campbell, nothing about this strikes me as valid if it's literally translated. Nothing. In the infallibility, it's like your mortality. It's like the bliss state that Campbell talks to us about. The commonness of all major religions, the similarities in thinking that he helped us to understand as part of the human mind. Mm. The last two are not included, these two explanations, not included by Preston, you know, as in Prestonian lecture, that one. They both still appear in the lodge, the crane and pulley being associated with the Lewis or cramp, used to lift stones to certain heights with little encumbrance and to fix them on their proper basis. The whole signifying strength. The trestle board or tracing board represents a draftsman's board in which, as the description implies, the master laid out the plans for the workmen to follow. The tracing board is now one of those three immovable jewels of the lodge, and as the rough and perfect ashlars are associated with the junior and senior wardens, in most lodges, so is the tracing board essentially the master's implement. In old renderings of the third degree, it was to draw the designs for the next day that Hiram Abiff went every day at high 12 before paying his daily adoration, and he left those designs on the tracing board. Unfortunately, in the changeover to the time of the Union of Grand Lodges, or probably just after, confusion arose about the master's tracing board, which would in older times be displayed on trestles and might have on its representations of symbolic symbols or hieroglyphics of a moral nature. And the new form of separate lodge boards for each degree, now known as tracing boards, so that the passage in the modern lecture forms regarding the immovable jewel that the tracing board is for the master to lay lines and draw designs on, the better to enable the brethren to carry on the intended structure, is rendered quite unintelligible in a symbolic sense by the identification of the tracing board as the modern name given to the lodge board. On English Grand Lodge certificates designed in the present form in 1819, the draftsman's tracing board is quite clear with pencil and rule resting on it for the master to use. Apart from the crane and pulley and the trestle board, the remainder are those included by Preston, and the wording of them is virtually precisely the same, although it is a matter for conjecture as to which came first and who copied from whom. One thing is quite clear, that in this formal moralizing of the tools, seeming to date its development from the 1780s, which much is still used in masonry today, it is equally apparent that those who settled what should be included in the new arrangement in 1816 decided to omit certain of the earlier symbolism and to rearrange a good deal of what was to be left. Firstly, it was decided to keep the number of tools for each degree at the specific Masonic number 3. We'll pick this up. We'll pick it up. Excellent. Excellent work. And there we go. When you think, you look at the trestle board, mallet. I kind of like the notion of the mallet, you know, what that can teach us. Or it's just a lump of wood. Just a lump of wood. Devilish, those masons, aren't they? Packing all this information in. This is the kind of stuff that separates us from service clubs and men's organizations. It's what you give. It's the price that you give. The effort to understand. That's the price you pay. Did you think that Freemasonry was going to give and give and give and you were just going to sit there passively and receive? Did you really think that that's what self-development is about, that you can possibly achieve self-development and insight just by sitting like a lump on the shore? No, you get up and you walk. And you bend over and you watch and you listen. And what do you hear? You hear the waves crashing. You hear all that energy going on around you as you walk through the lodge. And here, instead of that boy picking up an object and wondering who held it in their hand previously and how and the distance of its journey to your shore, to your feet, you do that in a lodge. A lodge curated. The symbols around you are curated. Even as sparse as they are here in Upper Canada, I know it's a bit grim. That'll change. Don't worry. That's changing now. No, it's not about disrespecting what's here. This was created by people that didn't have exposure to what to the potential of Freemasonry. You have to hear a symphony to understand what a symphony is, unless you're really remarkable intellect. And we draw to a close today. I'm grateful for your participation, for your attention, grateful for your support. A shout out to Japan, to our brethren in Australia. It is a remarkable pleasure for me. And the boys in Portugal and Netherlands, and of course, it validates what we do when you tune in. And Britain and North America, yeah, goes without saying. We rise above the cacophony. Mm-hmm. Far from the maddening crowd. Here. I've got I had queued up Dave Brubeck, Take Five. That's a music that I've always wanted to have on the show, but I want to do it now. We're winding down. I'll leave you with a little Oscar Peterson C-Jam. Mm-hmm. And I hope you like it. C-Jam Blues. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Prepare and think about the work that's needed, the price that we pay for our learnings. And conduct yourself with a smile. Life is serious. It doesn't have to be dramatic. And we can bring happiness just by smiling. It'll mess up the minds of very meager people. Bullies will just go berserk because they won't know why you're had so darn happy. That's great. Makes despots and ideologues just crazy. Come on back. See you soon. This is Oscar Peterson. Very young. Lodge.